Right, this is going to be another episode of Counterpoints. I am here with Maniac. Then there is no guests, or spoiler, it's just us talking now, innit? Right, obviously, I know where we start here, Maniac, because I've got to do the thing that I feel like, I don't know if it is that I've become a boomer or an elder statesman, if you want to make it classy, or maybe I've just been on the block and seen things happen before and learned from people's mistakes and patterns. But I feel like right now, everyone is what you call in English a prisoner of the moment. Because we all keep doing this, even though technically this season actually didn't begin with Blast Groups. It began with the EWC, the Esports World Cup. But Blast Groups is the event right afterwards. And if you were at the EWC, which not every team was, it's the first event for certain teams. So I have to say, everyone knows for the last few years, basically since we came out of the online era, we've had this approach where Blast Groups is always the first tournament after the player break, and as history has shown, the most notable example ever being when somehow Evil Geniuses did beat Heroic when they were the number one team in the world, and then the joke is I think Evil Geniuses like lost the next nine LAN series and maybe won like, you know, against nobodies, and that was it. And so it was probably the most like fraudulent result ever in the history of Counter-Strike is the joke. Essentially, I think that's an extreme example, but I have to say, guys, please, please think back to past seasons when they begin after the player break, and you can watch the, we're all doing it, we all watch these Blast Group stages. Haven't we learned by now? It's probably like, I'm not going to say it's worthless data, Maniac, but it's not super indicative of how good the teams are, for example. Because I feel like everyone, every time, overreacts to these groups. And remember, it's also only groups, Maniac. I don't understand if it was groups and then the finals already was just part of one event like ESL does, you know, and it was like, right, we do these groups, then next week, though, oh, it's the playoffs. Like, that'd be something. But the fact we just do these group stages, I'm not saying I'm, like, done with the idea, but I feel like people are way too quick to do, like, new roster's definitely good. Oh my goodness, this player move, it's bad. Do it. And it's like, bro, I've had the one event. Like, do you not get that same feeling? Listen, in the moment, I'm like that too, mate. When like, you know, when Cole beats someone, oh, maybe they are good. But when I pull back, I just realize we're going too ham on this, guys. Come on.
They've been deprived. They've been deprived of Counter-Strike for a long time. It was just Esports World Cup, right? That's the only thing after the summer break. So now everyone is looking for reasons to be hyped or reasons to be absolutely outraged. So I get it. I get it. I don't react like that. I've been used to this structure for quite a while. Good. And now I just have like a differential approach depending on what team is playing, right? I think maybe new teams have like longer teeth and they have something more to prove.
Yes.
Then you have like the most established teams who are pretty much using it to get back into the rhythm. But let's be clear, like nobody wants to end up in the showdown. I think no matter if this is just a group stage or what, I think teams still want to pretty much punch the ticket for the fall final, avoid that whole like online crap that they have to play, which everyone is super adamant about. It's a problem in the calendar. So I still think teams have some stakes at it when they're playing the basketball groups. But yeah, let's not be outraged, guys. No, it's just ease into the new season, nice and slow.
Exactly. Because here's the thing, Maniac. You can hear the voice I'm doing now. Mm. Obviously, this has been really messy, hasn't it? These results are really dirty. It's not the clean Counter-Strike I'm used to seeing. Which is convenient, I would say that, because we have a sponsor for this episode called Mando at shopmando.com. They're using the code POINTS, P-O-I-N-T-S. Obviously, this is Counterpoints. So as the prepared can material says, but I'll do my version of it. What's the most valuable thing in the world? Now, the obvious answer to that is Carrigan eventually winning more majors than Glaive and proving he's the greatest of all time and everyone having a shot up at me being right. So essentially, actually, I'll rephrase that. Thorin being right is the most important thing in the world.
Oh my God.
To Thorin, apparently. But do you know what the second most valuable thing in the world is? It's time, Maniac. See? Ooh, because time is what we exist in. It's what we do. There's a limited amount. It's finite. If there really were 30 hours in the day, couldn't we all get everything done? I mean, some would just say Thorin would just tweet 6 more hours worth of garbage about all the players that you all like. So maybe some of you wouldn't want more time. But the point is, managing and worrying about body order, by the way, something I really hope people in Counter-Strike do listen to. It's not even a meme. I was like that too when I was 18 too. Let's be real, probably 28. Managing and worrying about body odor, it used to take up a lot of my time. I was paranoid about smelling, especially around midday. It was all extremely time consuming. That's not even totally accurate, but it is a vibe. Like, I get people do have that experience. I was probably actually a bit too weird. I didn't care back then, but I did learn later. If I could go back, that's one thing I would change. So here's the key thing. With Mando, they can help you out in that regard. Because what's interesting is Mando actually also has quite an interesting approach where, because it's aluminium free and doesn't have a lot of things and does not advertise itself as an antiperspirant, it actually has a different mechanism. It doesn't cover up body odor after the fact with heavy fragrance, which is the usual approach. It stops odor at the source by blocking the bacteria on your skin from eating your sweat, which apparently is how body odor is caused. So what does this mean? It means Mando is clinically proven to control odor for up to 72 hours. So give yourself this precious gift of time, because there currently isn't a sponsor that can give Carrigan 4 or 5 majors. So we'll sell for time and some body odor thing. Give yourself the precious gift of time and get yourself some Mando whole body deodorant. They have a special offer, as you can see on the screen here. New customers get $5 off Mando's best-selling starter pack with code POINT, POINTS, at shopmando.com. I've actually used this one. I've used like the soap one. What I actually like about it is it's not like an overpowering fragrance. It's quite a neutral smell to me. Also, the feel of the bar, I actually like. It feels a little bit more like an old school soap as opposed to what you think of with like a gel or something like that. I kind of like that feeling where you do the rub, but it's not some crazy lather. It's like a nice little one, you know, it doesn't feel too horrible. And also, I think it smells quite good too. They have Impressive. All sorts of other things like... It's aluminium free, it is baking soda free, it's cruelty free, it's dye free, it's vegan. As I said, it's clinically proven to control body odor better than shower with soap alone. Apparently, this is just a quick thing there. Apparently, there's a thing called a Grundle odor level, which is somewhere they like evaluate symmetric for what odor amount is. Apparently, 12 hours after a shower, the average man's Grundle odor level was at a 5 out of 10, and then people who used Mando, it was at a 0 out of 10. So it effectively done exactly what you would want it to do to remove the body odor. So luckily, I have a discount code to help you get started with my favorite smelling body, whole body deodorant on the market. And that is new customers get $5 off a starter pack with our exclusive code, which is POINTS, POINTS, which is worth about 40% off the starter pack, by the way, at shopmando.com. So shopmando.com. Thank you to Mando. Now then, let's get into the rest of the episode. So there's obviously right now, as we actually are filming this episode, Blast Groups is actually winding up. But again, as I pointed out at the beginning of the episode, that isn't the be-all, end-all. Like, well, it's not like because we didn't see the last game, it's like, oh no, the whole narrative changes. Hopefully it doesn't. That's what I would hope. But I do think, as usual, it's not valueless. Like, there's obviously like certain things about individual form or some aspects that we can start to think about the new lineup. So what we thought we'd do on this episode is, obviously next week is IEM Cologne, which is one of the big prestige events of the year. It's basically going to be like the third biggest event of the year so far. With the major, it will be top four events. So it's going to be one of those big events you anchor in the year. Everyone, by the way, one thing I love about those events is why I even said this should be a factor for whether you're a prestige event or not, is look, the AWC had a lot of prize money, and I'm sure in future years, because if you notice, guys, they did the same thing in League of Legends. They obviously kept a quite simple, smaller format because they didn't want to make it super complicated. It's the first official EWC. What they want to do is, I imagine it'll be in future years, they'll go to like a Cologne-style massive group stage, you know, all that stuff. So basically, to me, the thing that makes those event prestige events is... we all know they are, essentially. So nobody ever is doing that excuse, bro, when they go to Cologne. Like, no, I was just sort of like experimenting. You know, I'm trying to peek later at the majors. Like, no, everyone wants to win Katowice, Cologne, the majors. Those are the events. So what we'll do is let's take some narratives around teams, but obviously we'll look towards Cologne. We'll do some of the teams that are going to be at Cologne. So we can use some things maybe that we saw at EWC or Blast. So you pick one first, Maniac. Who's a team right now that you're thinking about? They're on your brain. You're projecting forwards and wanting to see something that might happen. Some things repeat. Who are you thinking about at the moment?
Let's do the pluses. Let's do the positives for now, because there's a bunch of teams that obviously I worry about a little bit for Cologne. But let's talk about Spirit, right? Let's talk about Spirit for a second.
Sure.
I watched them at EWC. I wasn't exactly sure what to make of the loss against G2. I think they pretty much like everybody else got completely taken by surprise by G2's play style, the playbook that we didn't really know what to expect from a Nico that is kind of playing his exceptional Counter-Strike once again. And I personally still believe, even though they lost in the quarterfinal at EWC, I still think Spirit will be an extreme contender for winning Cologne overall. After all, they won the last big stage event, right? That was London. They raised a trophy over here. So I still have Spirit extremely high up. And as you said, they're playing the Blast right now. And it hasn't exactly been the easiest of time. They lost one map to Complexity. But I just, I just like the discipline that they have in their approach. Like, even after the win versus Complexity, which was a little earlier, Zontix was talking to the interviewer, James, and he was explaining how, you know, this isn't exactly the best they can do. Sure, they qualify, but there's still some things that needs to be set up. And I feel like this is a healthy approach. Like, no one is looking to peak in Copenhagen right now. Like, that doesn't serve a purpose unless you're like a new team and then you're chasing a tournament because you have to have that berth. You have to have these kind of reps under your belt. No one is trying to peak there. People are trying to peak in Cologne. And I, when it comes to Spirit, I think they're on track. I don't really doubt that they will be in the playoffs. I have them in the grand final as is. And in a game of sort of musical chairs where winners have changed here and there when it comes to Counter-Strike, I feel like Spirit really is still up there. So I don't know what's your take on them, if you share like the confidence that I have in that team, but I'm still very much there.
No, actually, to me, Team Spirit are the weirdest evaluated team by fans. Like, I feel like too many fans wanted off the roller coaster after the major. Like, the fans went like this. Like, they themselves were hyping it because it was like, can this team really be as good as they look? Are they really this insane? Is Donk really all that? Then Katowice came. Obviously, if anything, they exceeded all possible expectations. I still think in history, that's one of those events where someone should probably make a documentary about that in like five years, you know, because like that could be incredible. If you think about like all the context, then I'm sure all the teams behind the scenes were like, yeah, they'll be good. I bet even the top teams all thought they were. I mean, in fact, if anyone saw that clip from the Carrigan footage where he basically even says on the comms in the final, like something like, let's not let this fucking 17-year-old win against us or something. Like, everyone would have thought they would have fallen, but they did it, right? But then the joke is they did fall at the major, funnily enough, in almost exactly the same fashion that we all thought would happen in Katowice. So after that, the problem was, I think everyone, right, after that major wishes, like there was obviously Chengdu, that there would be an event right after, but that Spirit had been at. And so we could have known, was it like the one-off at the major? Maybe they just like the pressure got to, by the way, they still almost beat FaZe. I will always remind people of that. Absolutely. They still absolutely could have won that and won the major. Who knows? So they had that. I even point out they actually beat Na'Vi in this tournament, if people don't remember, in that Swiss system. So they even had it essentially all on the cards to potentially do it. And obviously, no one had ever seen them play Vitality. A mixture of that and then the fact that when they came back, they not only didn't do Chengdu, they skipped Pro League. And then when they finally came to events again, look, they did the dreaded Sin Maniac of didn't win the event. They still were really good, but they didn't win the event. And then obviously people know as we went through the year, eventually, oh my goodness, Donk even had a bad series. So like, I think all of this combined made this weird storyline where even as you say, they actually ended the season with the win, guys. I mean, before that, they were like a top four team. Then they made the finals and won the last of it. Somehow, I do think people looked at that and they were sort of like, nah, who cares? And they were kind of just out on Spirit already. And then we come back now, as you say, I think actually they probably need to win EWC. They didn't. And then at Blast, look, I still think they were good. Like I always, there's another thing about group stages. I don't care how close a game is in the group stage as long as the better team wins. In my opinion, the only thing group stages are for if you're a favourite is survival. You're just trying to get out. And especially if you get out at first, who even cares if it's three maps or close? So even though everyone's going to look at this call series, like, oh my God, maybe Call should have won. Oh my Spirit, what's going on? Like, I don't care. As long as you win that, we can worry about any other issues going forward. So essentially, here's where I'm at. I actually think it's wild that people either over focus on like Na'Vi winning, or they look at like Vitality when they're on top, or they ask where's fit. Because, dude, if I had to pick right now, gun to my head, I would take Team Spirit as number one in Counter Strike right now. Like, if Cologne starts tomorrow or the major starts tomorrow, I'd take Spirit. Now, I will say the obvious angle that's trickier for them in the major is they don't have the experience level of some of the other teams in that sense. Some of their players, like Donk, would be a second major at that point in time, you know. Mm. But if you put them in a normal tournament, like a Cologne, which to them is normal, guys, they won kind of eight already. Like, in theory, that's an event you should assume they should actually come in with quite a lot of confidence to. I'm with you. The difference is, I certainly think there is a world where Vitality could win it. I can't know about G2. Maybe we'll get to them later. Obviously, Na'Vi's a dark horse, FaZe's a dark horse. But the difference is, I'm with you. If I'm having to pick one team, or forget even win, just to go the deepest. I think this is the one I can most consistently pick is Spirit for me.
Yeah, and I agree. And also in terms of the specific matchup of Na'Vi Spirit, it's still one that I personally would have Spirit.
Oh, they dominated it, right? Generally, yeah.
Exactly. So now you're finding yourself in a situation where a lot of teams are in flux. You have G2 for whom we're trying to figure out. We're going to talk about them later. We're trying to figure out what this lineup is made of. Like, where's the map pool? Are they comfortable with that structure on different maps? You have Vitality, who is almost impossible to predict in terms of, like, is there going to be a mental breakdown? In fact, you could almost say that the odds are in favor of a mental breakdown because it's happened so many times.
Sure.
Miles and the whole, this is a prestige event, are going to show up.
Yep.
FaZe, that looks a little bit still tired, still a little bit lost. So you put all of these back to back to back, and actually, aside from Na'Vi, from whom we've established that the matchup is in favor of Spirit, it's like, yeah, I favor Spirit over anybody else. Like, that's just currently is just the case. And what is even more interesting, and I think it's something that is very underrated about them, is that when we had this incredible start at the beginning of the year with the Katowice run, historical run, as you mentioned, probably worth making hours and hours of content, you could always technically hide behind, like, this is a one time. Like, this is not going to happen again. Like, Dog is never going to have these numbers. We've just witnessed history. They're going to fly right back down, or rather crash right back down and disappear. And they're even more scary right now because they have had a few disappointments and they bounced back.
Yes.
Like, right now, they have already established that they can have an event where they don't win. Case in point, EWC, just they don't win. But they can still be even right before, right after, still win events. And I think, to me, this is something that is extremely scary as a team, that they are not just going to face adversity and liquefy immediately. And you mentioned as well, strongly underrated how young some of these players are. So if you are trusting in the system, in how they behave as a team, how they process their matches, their wins and their losses, then you have to imagine that there is going to be a factor of improvement from event to event to event to event, because these players are getting more and more experience. Donk, which we already know Donk is exceptional as a player. Like, no, nobody is going to challenge that. Yeah, he's had a couple of series that by his standards were failures.
Sure.
Now we get to see how he bounces back from that. And is he capable of once again showing up and having monstrous performances? I think so. But every event that passes, I think they become more scary. And personally, as you say, in terms of odds, I feel like they're at the top of the food chain for Cologne.
And I'll give you some other reasons. Like, first of all, aside from the new G2 lineup, which has admittedly already played one fucking tournament, or one and a half, or whatever you tell Blast now, basically they've beaten every other team. They're actually one of the only teams that can say that. The only one they haven't basically is Mouse. And as you just pointed out, Mouse have their own issues before they can worry about, hey, we beat Spirit every time. Like, bro, the joke is, if you met them in a finals, if you're Spirit, you're like, isn't it kind of even now, guys? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that would naturally offset itself. And quite frankly, there's a reason why we didn't put Mouse at the beginning of our list. Like, I think everyone's waiting to see on that one. Their problem is they have too many factors like that. So what I would also say, the other reason I think that Spirit is mega consistent, look, you can look at the players. I do think, by the way, Donk and Shiro, probably two of the most consistent stars in the scene right now. And as we pointed out on many episodes, the brilliant thing is there's no overlap in their game. Like, they not only don't get on each other's toes, bro, they help each other. That's one of the craziest things about that dynamic. Like you said, obviously the person who got all the shit after the major wasn't Donk, it was Zontix, wasn't it? Everyone's like, see, haha, you felt... You know what? He's had a couple of those, but he's also bounced back, like you said. Like, it feels like one of the things I love about his narrative is every time he has the major or the elimination match, he fails. It feels like the next tournament, he comes back like a demon and just has like the opposite end. He has his like career game and reminds you he's really good. So you look at the squad, they should be really consistently good. Whereas you think of every other top team right now, they all have those question marks. Like, you know what? In Modesty right now, might not even be the best player. In G2, he's not even the best G2 probably. Player. You go look, Zero is pretty much the best player in Vitality until the match they lose. We all know that storyline, that narrative. But so you look, right, their stars, their players are more consistent. And then even one thing I've been looking at recently is the map pool. Bro, people still don't get this. When they had their breakout at Katowice, because the only map they lost was one game of like Anubis to fucking Na'Vi, if you remember. It was that one where Wonderful had like the 1v4 clutch or whatever. It was still really close.
Yes. Because
they only lost that one map in the whole tournament. Obviously, anytime you go undefeated, your map stats just get ridiculous. It's like what you start back in the day to Tai Lu in China. You couldn't actually know as a researcher like who's good because he had like 90% win rate on every map. So you're like, well, obviously that's not real. Like, that just means actually sometimes you're even just fragging people. You can't be actually that. But all I'll say is this, Maniac, right? I looked on the HLTV site. I did the thing where I did this lineup because if you remember the original Blast groups at the beginning of the year, they couldn't use like Zontix and someone else. Yeah, they had like two different players. They had the coach and someone else. So I put it just for this lineup in 2024. So still fairly relevant, like 6 or 7 months basically. Bro, their map win rates are mental. Like, this is how strong this team is, guys. As in, before I explain this, think in your brain, every time you've seen them lose, it's like Ziwu failures. If they're not happening loads and we're just highlighting the big ones. Every time we're talking, it's the one time they failed. Like, they only failed like 3 or 4 times, basically. So listen to these fucking win rates, right? So on Ancient, they have an 80% win rate. On Nuke, they have a 91% win rate. On Anubis, they have an 88% win rate. On Dust 2, the brand new map, they have a 75% win rate. On Vertigo, the map they barely play and were forced into in that game against FaZe and just lost not that long ago, I think to Mouse, that they have a 57% win rate on that. Mirage is one they play a lot, but has sort of dropped off a bit. Oh, they've only got a 53%. So, by the way, on a coin flip map, they still win most of the time. And then, obviously, they do not play... what's the one map they don't play? Inferno. Yeah. Inferno's their permaban. They don't have a permaban. Yeah. Right, guys, there's every single map has a over 50% win rate. And as I said, like four of them are like 75% plus.
Yeah,
like, that is impossible. Because here's why, Maniac. Here's why this team is going to be so impossible to beat. Because when I watched the game they played today against Cole, where they absolutely pulled that game out of the fucking fire, when Cole really did have it won about five times over, bro, I went and looked. Holy shit, dude, this year they are 11-1 on Nuke, and the one loss was a fucking OT loss where JL went like 40 kills plus 21 in the Swiss system of the Major. That's the one Nuke loss. Here's why this is going to be scary, Maniac. They don't even pick Nuke often. This Nuke is being picked into them or as a decider. They only picked it a couple of times, essentially against teams that really cynically you could draft into. They themselves don't pick Nuke, Mini. They go to like the Dust 2s of the world and shit like the Mirages, etc. So what's crazy is, the reason why I bring this up is, I've always thought a really underrated thing if you want to be number one or dominant is if you can just get 2-0s. Because if you keep going to that third map, then if one player turns up, you're in trouble. But if you can keep winning your opponent's map pick, that's how every dominant team comes in place. So if other teams can't pick Nuke into you, and think about some of the teams in the scene, Maniac, I'll throw out some names. Na'Vi, FaZe, fucking G2, Vita. Everyone loves this map. Astra, every fucking top team they're going to play loves Nuke. So you can see there's so many analytical reasons as to why this team, basically, if they can overcome nerves, experience, they could actually just be number one. I'm still kind of hyped for Spirit, mate.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I also think they really truly benefited from Vertigo being so deeply changed, because I think it bought them time. Because I don't know, out of all the teams that are going to show up at Cologne, I don't know how many of the elite teams are going to be ready to pick Vertigo. Like, I know people are dipping their toes in it now, and we're seeing it more and more in Copenhagen, because after all, some teams have natural vetoes that they don't want to play, so it's not, you can ignore Vertigo, you have to start playing it. But there's a difference between feeling like you can float it and then actually aggressively picking it in, like, let's say, a quarterfinal of Cologne. So I think Spirit are kind of being a little bit protected by that. Not a lot of people are going to be on their trail for that. The Mirage one is one where I do think there is a little bit of a way in. Like, you brought up the numbers for the whole year. The last 3 months, actually 28%. Granted, they lose to the best.
Yes.
Like, they lose to the best. And it's not like clown teams that take them down on Mirage. You're talking about Mouse, Vitality twice, Na'Vi and G2. But there's still a way in.
Like that's always featured as well in the series. Either they pick it as a decider, right? So I agree. You still have a chance to win a map against them if you are the best teams.
You can. But if you want to put Spirit in a really bad corner, you need Mirage and Vertigo as very strong maps. Because then you can float Vertigo, you can force them to either leave the map open for a pick, or you can gamble the fact that Mirage would be a third map and then you're ready on it. But that's already like such a constraining list of conditions that you have to go up against for Spirit. And that put them in such a great spot for Cologne in terms of map pool.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think we're on a similar spot on that one.
Yeah. So now if we talk about Spirit and then we say, okay, they had the upper hands on Na'Vi. We saw the final in London, 3-1 for Spirit. I really think that the grand final was probably a little bit closer than it actually looked like.
It was still Spirit
dominating. What do you think about Na'Vi? Because I for some reason I think Na'Vi is being not really slept on, but they're not being celebrated anyway. Like, I don't think people are rushing to actually, you know, give praises to Na'Vi and to the Na'Vi system. But the truth is, when you see like the material that they're working with, their season, their 2024 has already been very impressive.
Oh, of course, yeah.
You talk about a major win.
On paper, they're the number one team.
Another trophy at EWC. And by the way, the EWC run is probably as legitimate as it gets. Like, they play.
Oh, the teams they play.
Yeah, Mal G2 or something like that. It's like one of the most legitimate run you could possibly have. And I think it is underrated how strong mentally Na'Vi is getting right now, because they have, in all of these series, even in Riyadh, they would at times get smacked in the face on a map, like truly, really just completely disappearing through an entire map, where you would think most teams would enter into the second one still kind of half drunk from the uppercut that they got to the face. not Navi. Like, not Navi. They've already shown that they can completely recalibrate, refocus from one map to the other. You can never really hope that the momentum you're going to carry over to the next map is not going to happen. So mentally, strongly underrated as far as I'm concerned. Then you have Wonderful, who no one is ever going to say is the best sniper in the world, because that spot is already taken and all of the praises, all the flowers go to Monacy, and then they go to Zaiwu, and then they go to Shiro. So nobody really gives Wonderful the time of day, but super consistent, incredibly underrated culture as well. And holy hell, what is going on with Bit? Like, Bit, yes. Bit is the enigma that I cannot figure out. Because, like, whenever he shows up, and that happened in Riyadh, oh my God, like, the guy is so strong. He is so strong, probably at times the strongest anchor there is in the game. And he's had a couple of these events already now in 2024. I don't really rely on JL having superstar performance. I don't. I think JL is more, he's serviceable and he's role-oriented and he's selfless and he takes Jewel and he takes risks and he does what he needs to do at times. He's gonna have the odd map out here and there, or maybe even the odd event out here and there when he's going to pop off. But if you start telling me that Bit's level is reliable and Bit from Riyadh is a Bit that we can foresee in the future, this is getting really serious on account of, like, the rifle skills for Navi. Just this guy on his own, I feel like, is already making the case.
No, there's a lot to do there. But here's the funny thing. The problem is, I actually feel like, here's a good analogy for you. I feel like Navi, the team, is like Wonderful, the player. Everyone else, somehow, I would think everyone would be like me and you. I think we're in agreement. But everyone else just goes to one extreme or the other. Like, first of all, when I say that it was a fluke to win these events, that has never meant this team is bad. I don't like this bad team and they can't ever win matches. It just means if you ever look at the two times they've won events, they had absurd overperformances from people like JL particularly, but obviously in the final, it was mainly for the whole event of EADC, but just in the final, obviously Bit went mental on that last map especially, didn't he? So they've had certain performances where essentially that just doesn't happen very often. It so far has happened twice a year, you could say, right? So that aspect is why I say that, like, essentially, it's not that, like, they're not good when they win. It's just that, like, I wouldn't expect that to happen in the next two or three events. Whereas the difference is, Maniac, I don't think that's, this is where I think people are being very unfair. If you see a team win the major, it's absolutely reasonable to think they should win the next events. They should even be the favourites. So I think people are playing a little bit of, like, have your cake and eat it. When they agree, they tell me it wasn't a fluke, but then they also go, but of course they're not the best, though. It's like, oh, fucking hell. That's what's inferred when you win the World Championship. But then the other side is also a nightmare. People then want to make it that, because on paper, it's absolutely true. If I was doing Thorin's world ranking still, well, one of the reasons I don't do it anymore is they were almost the same as HLTV by the end. We had, like, a similar philosophy. So if I was doing mine, they would have to be number one right now, guys, because that's how it works when, assuming, by the way, technically it would actually on my 3-month thing have dropped off the major. But also, there's not that many other teams have won events. Like, everyone else has basically won one event, unless you're Mouse, and then Mouse win all the ones that no one gives a fuck about because they're all in, like, in a broom closet with one person peeking through the keyhole. It's a pretty good joke, isn't it? I know. But that's also what it feels like. So no one ever looks at them. And even though spiritually they sometimes look like they could be the best, no one really believes it. You know what I mean? Everyone goes, nah. So if I was doing it, I would have to reckon them one. But the problem is, for all the number ones we have, think of the number ones in the last few years, guys. They're like the best teams in the world. You don't have the same confidence about this team. So I agree with you. The problem becomes, why are they inconsistent, basically? Because what's funny is, I actually think, this is what will sound funny, when people like JL and Bit don't go absolutely crazy, which doesn't happen that often, I actually think the Navi you see most days is actually incredibly consistent. In fact, actually, I think one of their problems, which is why they lose a lot of times in quarters and semis, is they actually look, because they play that Blade style, like they're somewhat predictable. By the way, that's not even a diss. Some of the greatest teams of all time are like that tactically. So to me, there's two Navis. There's the Navi that's just quite consistent, and I think they rely massively on one Wonderful is the star of the team. Like, I'm with you. People actually, because he's not Monacy, they've started treating him like he's a fucking, like, they act like he's just in some, like, they act like he's Hedrick. There's my analogy for you. Like, he's not even that good. It's like, first of all, he's really good. Like, if we're doing opens, he's probably like third or fourth on the fucking list, guys. Like, he's right up there. He's just not Monacy, and crucially, he doesn't have the Monacy aura and the extra added star pact of doing it right. He's just, like I always say, for me, he's the player who's on the brink of superstar and star. He's like a star, clearly, but is he a true superstar? Like, no one would really draft him outside of this team. So what they rely on is, you have to rely on Wonderful, which is why I agree with you. I think he ends up underrated, actually, because the difference is, he has to be there every game. The games where he isn't, everyone points it out, like Zemu style, but, like, bro, the difference is, people like JLB, they can have two events off now because of what they did. Wonderful will get the criticism if he doesn't carry every match. map. And then beyond that, I think it's Blade and Alexi B were doing all this amazing work. They do the playbook, they do the calls, they always have the prep, it looks like. They even draft well. I think Blade is fantastic at VTOR. So I think this is one of my points I'm going to make, though. This is why they can't be the other version of Na'Vi, which is the one that wins the events and looks fucking amazing. And by the way, you won't believe this if you're a fan, but I love watching that Na'Vi. Spoiler, if that Na'Vi was here every event, I wouldn't say they were a fluke. I'd be saying, this is one of the greatest teams to ever play Counter-Strike. Blade is a genius. Wow, he's going to win four majors without any fucking top five players. That would be fucking sick, wouldn't it? But you notice I don't do that angle. I don't do the Kerrigan angle that I'm able to do with FaZe Clan, where they don't have the superstars, but they win the events and they go to the finals, right? So one of the reasons why, and I think it's quite logical, is, as I just said, I think Blade has always been very good and very shrewd at vetoing and doing the draft phase. But if you look with Na'Vi, bro, they are one of the teams with the least amount of surprise factors in the VTOR. And that has to be for a logical reason if you think about who Blade is. It implies they're just not that good on the other maps and they're not going to gamble. So they become also predictable in the VTOR. And this is where I don't think, essentially, I'm going to double down, Maniac. They won't continue to win many big events. They might win the odd event, like let's say one out of every five, if things go well, like people pop up. Because the other factor is the map pool, bro. Like if you look at their map pool, right? The big map that they need if they want to win, and I'm not talking like, you know, the odd seed, if they want to win consistently, they need to be really good on Mirage. They are really good on it. They love that map. Nuke, that's a go-to for them. The problem with Nuke is everyone plays it. And then the third one, obviously, it's what won them their two titles, was Inferno, right? Right, there's a couple of problems here, guys. You know the Inferno games they've played? They were only in the finals of the two events they've won. Yeah, they don't play Inferno aside from that. So one, that even shows me right there, they don't even have one of the main maps that's got them there. Guys, I don't make them veto this. They choose not to opt into that map. And by the way, I'll tell you right now, think of any great team in the last 2 years of CS. Anyone who actually thinks they're amazing at Inferno picks Inferno. You don't leave it till the third map. That's like a compromise. That's like, look, if we both don't second VTOR, and I guess it's possible, then I guess I'll play that. Like, they're not doing that out of confidence. So I don't think they really, like a fan would hope, Maniac. Like, you know the old thing back in the day when if you lost a small LAN, they'd go, they're just saving strats for the major.
I know.
They're not, they didn't really, Maniac, win the Copenhagen major, then go, this Inferno technology is, the world's not ready. Put it away in the vault until the time it is necessary. And then they put it away. And then what happened is they got to EWC all those months later, Maniac. And then they were like, oh God, this G2 team's kind of scary, isn't it? Is it time, master? What do you mean, wonderful? Bring out the Inferno. Oh, they didn't really do that, right? What obviously happened is they just opted into it and they happened to win. And what's the reason why they all won that Inferno? Because you all remember, the same as the major bit was like fucking unbeatable. Like on that particular map, on T-side specifically, bro, his office is just that fucking apartments area. He wins every duel there. By the way, if you see the peaks he is taking out of that fucking the window of the apartment onto the balcony, those are all the angles where the CT kills you if you peek there. They're all lasered onto that area. Normally you get, he just owns people. He's getting headshot after headshot after headshot. His timing's mega. So the problem there is you have to believe Bit's going to be awesome like this. I will say, after going back, so recently I've been watching a bunch of Bit POVs to try and get into this topic. I will say the one thing with him is this. It's funny that everyone brags about his aim and his headshot percentage, because I actually think, even though he's very skilled, he's one of those weird players where he has insane aim, but he's not getting that many kills with it usually. But if you watch his style when he plays like Anchor, bro, he is incredibly smart, though. That's what's changed about his game. But remember, before the story went, it was Electronic and Simple. Bro, neither of them are there now. They're not in the service, so it can't be them. And we know Blade can't talk except the timeout. So I don't believe, I'm sorry, guys. LXCB, I can tell you, is not calling these rotations. This guy, not only when his aim is off, can he out-duel anyone, but bro, some of his actual movements are really impressive. Like his timings went to do a flank or went to like creep in behind when space is created elsewhere. Some of the moves are really clever. Yeah. So I think you combine that with when his aim pops off, which is not that often, but when it happens, it can look sick. In fact, I'll even give you the analogy of who he reminds me of. It's a perfect timing if you just watch Blast. He actually reminds me, in terms of his skills, of the player Rez in NIP. Because, bro, when they're on their game, they both have insane fucking skills. They're really actually mechanically powerful players. But you notice, they're actually quite inconsistent as to how often they have massive lands. Like, because both of them, as far as I know, don't have superstar egos, Maniac. They're not the guys who go, hey, like the premise here is, if you look at the skill set of Bit, if he actually had the ego of like Simple, bro, you'd go to Alexi B and Blade and go, listen, this anchor shit's cool and that, but give me him as spots. I'll carry the fucking game, you know, like give me his spots and we'll dominate. So first of all, the bit one, I just feel like the style of play and the strengths, they're not going to be having insane pop-offs at his. I would say he's the one player I could believe could do that because we all saw what he did in 2021. We all saw how bonkers he was in that line, but he was every land just cooking everyone. Like he was insane back then. It's just because Simple had better numbers and he was Simple that people didn't pay attention. Like in a normal team, he could have won some MVPs back then. He was really fucking insane. And then I'll throw this last aspect out there. Here's why I don't really believe. That's why I set the map pool up, which maps they need to be stronger. Here's why I don't believe it can happen. One, they don't play Inferno that much. And then secondly, let me double check. So on Nuke, which is one of the main maps they need to get their wins off, you look who they beat. Right, here's why those other two maps were strong maps for them, Inferno and Mirage at times. Because if you ever look statistically, those are far and away the best maps for Immer. I think he also was maybe good on Anubis. I think it was the third one. But if you ever look, he's not very good on Nuke, actually. Nuke's one of his maps he struggles on, and he has a lot of tough times on. So I think that's a problem right there, that one of your main two maps, one of your players that's constantly criticised, he's flagging on that map. He's having really bad games. He's getting fragged all over the place. He has a hard time getting into it. He has the worst stats probably of his entire fucking like career at the moment. Like the stats on that map, by the way, are shit to the point that like even when you go outside of those top 10, top 20, they never get up there, bro. He never gets to 1.0 against any level of opponent. So that's really worrying. And then in terms of the others, so we did Immer, right? The other two players, I obviously said for Wonderful. I think Wonderful actually genuinely is fairly consistent. I don't know why this myth comes from that he's failed. Like, I think people are they're giving him the Ziwu treatment, but he never was Ziwu, if you know what I mean. Like, I personally have no problem with Wonderful. I don't ever look at it and go, remove him. The only way I'd remove him is if you're telling me either like Simple's coming back and he promises he's going to like grind like a motherfucker, or yeah, we'd sign Modesty. Unless those moves are happening, I'm keeping Wonderful. I've said this analogy before, Maniac. Wonderful is like having a 17 or 18 in blackjack. Look, it ain't 21, but I'm going to hold on this one. You know what I mean? I'll stay. I don't think I'll be hitting another card on that.
For the record, even if Simple comes in with the best intentions, I'm not replacing Wonderful.
Okay. By the way, at this point in time, that's fair.
No, at this point in time, I think Wonderful earned his spot, and I think he's doing enough. And if anything, you could say to Simple, listen, pick up the rifle, just prove you're the absolute greatest, and go ahead. Like, find a new role. He even himself opened that door when he was talking about CS2. So that's what it'd be.
I've just got one last thing to say, which is on the GL topic. I have the same. I actually think, by the way, in history, despite all the memes and the jokes and all the shit on Twitter, in history, I will go down. I've actually fucking nailed it with GL again. If you go back to last year, bro, I actually can say I said this on shows last year. If you go back to Snake and Banter and Hot Take Point Made, etc. Last year, when they made this lineup with Wonderful, before they ever had the win at the major, I said about GL back then, I nailed it. I said he clearly isn't actually a star player. Like, you wouldn't put him in all the spots and give him all the resources. In fact, this team doesn't look like they give him, even though he's like a lurker, he doesn't get like insane lurk positions like Robs or whatever, you know. He plays as part of the team. But the key thing is, he is the definition of a big game player. Now, people get confused because they think every star should be a bit. No. What's cool is, this is why I always give the analogy to like Rain. You know from their roles they're not meant to be the star, but you all know that they will give you the odd game that you shouldn't sort of get from that player. And in his case, he can do it for a tournament sometimes. So you see again, every time they dominate, it needs this guy to go crazy. He has to have like mega biggest performances of the year. So it's not that like he's a bad player. It's just that that is not going to happen all the time. Like, yeah. I would just say it this way. If everyone wants to hype JL, again, like I said about the examples of like if we were doing a draft, if we took all the players in the top 50 now and we start today and we do it like a cynical draft, so the first pick is I pick Monesy, and then you pick Ziwu, then I pick Donk, and then you pick Anoshiro, you know what I mean, we do it like that, we go down, right, bro? Even though everyone's telling us now JL's like the shit, I think we'd get quite a few names deep before one of us picks JL. That's not hating. No, but dude, are we going to get like 20 names in or something, or 15 in or something? You know, like we get quite a few in, right?
I'm with you. I agree. I just think it's one of his players where if you lazily just look at the stats, you probably miss a big part of the picture of what's happening in games.
Oh, like, sure.
I personally reviewed the grand final of EWC on stream, and I even did like a in-depth analysis of Monesy's position and his roles. And there are a few entries that JL gets that literally just wins the round. And at the end of the day, on the stats page, it's just plus one, right? And then you get traded and that's it. But the truth is, some of these skills actually really do decide what's happening. And out of all of the players out there at the elite level, he really strikes me as one that is not going to doubt whether or not he needs to take that white sweep.
Yes.
And that's a little bit a la Rain as well. Like, it's
similar to that. It's a good answer.
These are the type of people who will definitely take the white swing. Doesn't matter if it's the grand final of the whatever, they'll go for it. So yeah, big game player in that regard for sure. On the just quickly on the Inferno topic, it's like psychologically speaking, it's kind of interesting because sure, it's definitely not a map that Na'Vi pick aggressively. But
you think it's going to scare people, though?
I do wonder. Like, I wonder how teams are going to behave right. when it comes to the Na'Vi's Inferno, yes, right? Because now true. The sample size is small, but the truth is, every time people have actually allowed it to go on a third map, and it's in a grand final, the Na'Vi just absolutely shafted them, like destroyed them. So you start to wonder, okay, do you as a team really actually feel like you're going to pick Inferno into Na'Vi? Because if you don't, then that's already like one step towards Blade's veto, because he knows, okay, we don't really want to play Inferno, but nobody's going to challenge us on it. Our track record is clean enough that we're going to scare the people who are on the fence, and only really the expert, like the people who are considering themselves expert and are absolutely airtight on Inferno will challenge us. So that kind of takes that away. It gives them a bit more freedom. And it's going to be interesting to see in Cologne, for example, who...
I mean, you could also argue, right, Maniac, in theory, it doesn't actually infer they have to play it. You could just hope people second veto it against you.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, exactly. And that gives you some rain for the second veto wave. Yes. And then you make sure that you get a better third map than you would if you had to remove Inferno. And you can kind of play the trickle-down game. And just to close like on Bit... And like the cerebral aspect of his gameplay, which is not really talked about too much.
People like, refer to him like a
headshot machine and all. We're going to have to keep an eye on it long term and see if that trend actually really holds true. But I really do think that if he is that of a cerebral anchor and if he is really capable of analyzing what's happening and making the right decisions, I really think like the jump to international must have messed him up massively. Because I can tell you as an anchor, there's going to be plenty of moments where you have to assume and you have to figure out on your own what your next move is based on what you're hearing. And your leader is not going to talk to you. Alexi B is not going to say, hey, we're going to retake Banana on Inferno. So by the way, Bit, I just want you to know you have to be careful right now because you're going to be alone for 15 seconds. So be mindful. No one tells you that. Like as an anchor, you deduct, like you have to infer what your next best move is based on what you're hearing, based on your teammates' decisions, based on the information they're giving you. So if we agree that maybe for Bit that transition was a little bit complicated, you can imagine how you would get to the wrong conclusions. Like you maybe missed the information. You're not exactly sure what your teammate is doing. Suddenly there's a bit of chaos. People are talking over each other. He loses track of what's happening. So if now his level keeps on rising and his consistency really prevails, then you can start really making the case that, he's getting more comfortable within the team speak within the communication atmosphere. He knows what's going on. He makes the best decision. And if that really holds true, then I think it really gives legs to that narrative of him being way more cerebral than what we actually think.
My one problem really on the Na'Vi topic is this. I know what's funny is I'm pretty sure fans probably just assume it's something weird. Like I'm a Simple fan and I want Simple to play. So if I hate on Na'Vi, maybe they'll sign Simple. It's not even like that. Like, by the way, even if you told me we're going to kick Immer, but we're not getting Simple, I would still take the deal, mate. And here's why. This is one of those areas where, even though, like I said, he has a couple of maps. If you go and look at Mirage and Inferno, these are maps that he definitely plays well on. Not big sample size on Inferno, obviously. But Mirage is their best map. And that's a map that Immer plays well on. The problem I have is this. I don't really buy the argument which people will always make for him, especially because they've won events, which is he must be doing like extra secret shit that like you don't notice on the scoreboard and it's like nuanced and you got to like really like break down the demo, maybe get the voice comms that you'd see when he was. I just don't really buy it, Maniac. Like I actually do think still he has performances where he looks a bit lost, where he definitely doesn't look like he himself's confident, where he's just missing. And by the way, he definitely has spots he just gets farmed on, in my opinion, on CT side. Like, so I do think the problem I have is he's actually the only person I would kick still. Because if you look at the rest of the team, I actually think Bit and Wonderful have fairly consistent games in terms of what they do. And by the way, look like, as we've talked about here, they look like they're the dream player for Alexi B and Blade. It looks like they're going to, like you said about JL, the guy's a soldier. He's not going, oh, but I don't think I should go in here because Dark Knight, he just runs in and tries to kill him. Which, by the way, for good or for ill, I want my entry to play like that, of course. Also, in clutches. This guy never got the memo that you're supposed to lose to Monacy and fucking Shiro in a clutch. He thinks he's supposed to just win them all. Yeah. You know what? I want one or two guys like that. I want a couple of guys like that, you know? So my problem is this, and obviously Alexi B, I'll just throw this out there. I think Alexi B has been fucking unbelievable since the player break.
Oh,
like,
definitely.
It feels like every T-side, he's just getting mad amounts of rounds off. whether they win pistol or not. Like, this guy just wins gun rounds. Like, I think if you go watch that EWC, he just won that final. I think he was the person that won that final. Even though they had some players overperform frags-wise, mate, some of those T-sides were, they were masterpieces. They were fucking incredible. So I actually do like Na'Vi. People don't get this. It's just my problem is, I essentially don't think like their A game turns up that often. And yeah, their B and their C game is like, look, it's good enough to be like fourth or fifth in the world. It's not bad. They're definitely not bombs. And I will say, it's not like they're getting grouped and shit like that. They're not going out like 11th or something.
No, they have a really high floor.
But like I was saying before, if we do what I just did with Spirit earlier in the episode, Maniac, I've like essentially gone to my head, like whom I... If I do gun to my head, bro, there's not. I'd go through quite a few teams before I get to Na'Vi. I wouldn't have them in my top three if I have to say and win the next major. Gun to your head, you die if you're wrong. Like, I don't know if I want to risk my life on JL having the right four. I don't know if I want to risk my life on, do they get the right maps for Imma? Do people know if Infernal is good or not? These are scary things. If I've got a gun to my head, man, it's all fun and games now. It's just a tweet to my head, a gun to my head. I'm a bit more cynical, you know.
Yeah, but you know, the fact is, there's only two teams that have won multiple events. I mean, we're not talking about Mouse and whatever description you gave of events, which made me crack, by the way. But it's only Na'Vi and Spirit, like, who've actually had repeated wins in stages and all. So it's kind of funny that we're still not ready to give them
Mouse,
that kind
but just on the smaller events. Yeah, true.
Like no, exactly. I mean, Mouse is definitely up there. But now another team that I said we were going to talk about positives, but one that is really starting to worry me is FaZe. I am getting worried about FaZe. I'm getting worried about FaZe for multiple reasons. I really thought that what we were witnessing towards, or what happened after Chengdu, just to put it bluntly, I really thought was basically just a decompression. Like, I thought they were on this incredible high of like grand finals and the grand final loss streak, which was probably fueling some sort of fire. Like, you know, you can imagine how as a team they would process this moment and be like, come on guys, like, it's not possible. Like, we get to the final all the time and we lose all of them. And it's like, it's building the pressure, like a pressure cooker, right? And then suddenly they win Chengdu and then it kind of floors. And that reaction after that is something that I had seen coming. But first of all, I didn't know that it would last so long after that. I thought maybe just Pro League would be sort of an aftershock and then they would rise back up to have better results. But then I thought, okay, the player break is definitely going to change something. The player break is going to be enough. They're tired. Okay, they're tired. They're exhausted. We're always making the point that they've played the most maps on land compared to all of the teams, and there is a statistical truth to that. But now we're after the break now. Now we're after the break. And EWC is a quarterfinal. Blast now is a straight into the showdown. So that's a loss to G2. That's a loss to NIP. EWC, obviously, that's a loss to Na'Vi. And like, are we missing something? Did I miss something? Did I oversimplify the issues that FaZe were having towards the second quarter of the year? Did I just blindly accept that this was just exhaustion and that's it? Now I feel like it's probably time to start wondering, like, are we looking at a team that would necessitate a change in order to be playing for trophies, in order to be contending for grand finals and all? Because I feel like the only argument that we have moving into Cologne is that we're in Cologne. I feel like this is the last stronghold. If you're a FaZe fan and you're trying to find a narrative as to why they are going to be the favorites, then your last leg is to say, well, this is the most important event just behind the major.
Yep.
So be ready because they're going to pop off massively. This is going to be it. This is where they play their best Counter-Strike and everyone is giving 120%. Now, I'm not saying this narrative is wrong, but I got to say that I don't have that many others left in the drawer if that one isn't true. So that doesn't make me comfortable. Like, again, gun to my head. That doesn't make me comfortable to tell you that, yeah, of course, FaZe is going to go to the grand final. I don't feel like that right now.
No, I'm with you. I mean, the problem is, this is where, like, it'll sound like I'm giving an excuse first, but I'm not, because I'm going to qualify it. So I will say, aside from actually the most recent loss to NIP, all the losses are to the other top teams. Like, it's the Na'Vi or Vitality or G2, which are obviously, in theory, the keyword theory, it's fine to lose to them, right? Except, it's only fine to lose them in isolation. Once it becomes a pattern that you just, the moment they lose to all these teams, that's my problem is, because if you look where they are right now, what's funny is, Maniac, if people look at the whole year, they're going to say FaZe has become really inconsistent. No. What are you talking about? You just have to divide it up into two portions. If you have up to IM Chengdu, FaZe is incredibly consistent. They make the final every time and only like people playing is the key thing. It's not just top teams. You have to play like 10 out of 10 CS to beat them. But Vitality did it. Spirit did it. They actually, even Na'Vi did it. These teams did like play their absolute best game of the year and they beat them as a team. The problem is this. Now they're really consistent again, but it's that they just make like quarters and just get eliminated by anyone good. And at the moment, by the way, they even get like slightly, I would, listen, it's like convincing, they're not getting blown out in all these games.
No,
but like
no.
The way they lose, they're not making it as close as you would think if you want to do, like you were saying, classic phase narratives, you know, they always get going in the big game, they're the clutchest team, the hardest team to beat. Those narratives have gone now. They're not actually the team. It's like you say, basically the one last copium is, oh, but on Cologne, when everyone else is shitting themselves for the Lanxess, they will rise again. Well, at this point in time, even that narrative sounds like a fucking phoenix, guys. Like,
they're dead. I know.
And you're just hoping they're going to miraculously come back. Because in this scenario, I don't know, Mouse or Na'Vi chokes on stage is what you're hoping for. I don't even know. I don't think you can rely on that as fans. How are you, Maniac? That's not a win condition that the other teams might choke. We have to, essentially, the problem fans has is they're clearly just not very good right now. And if you go and look at the stats, what's crazy is the stats are exactly identical of who's ranked where, right? Except every player, crucially, not even, don't look at the rating, but look at the kill death, where just the ratio. Because I always think if people don't know, the rating, depending on how it's calculated, can hide stuff. The actual like ratio has gone way down, mate. Everyone's dropped off like a significant amount.
Yeah,
everyone.
But they've lost so many games. In the last 3 months, they've lost more maps than they've won. They have lost more maps than they won in the last 3 months.
Yeah.
So that in itself is kind of a damning.
Well, there's another problem. Same scenario as what I did with Na'Vi. Bro, if you go to the map pool of FaZe, it also makes perfect sense because, bro, are they the best in the world on even one map? The answer's no. They're not. But here's what's wild. They're still pretty consistent across the maps.
No, they put again, a lot of work on through Ancient, but that's kind of it. But I only
there you go. So my problem is, if you think of all the teams out there, this is the difference, Maniac. If you give me Spirit and I look at the Veto, right, they're going to win Nuke. If you give me Na'Vi, right now I know they'll win Mirage. If you give me, I don't know, Vitality, you know what? Vitality might even win like a Vertigo or something. You know, there's all these maps that I can take these teams to win. Right now, if I'm FaZe, I can kind of see why they just like in these matches, but they lose them all because they don't have a map that's a home map that they can definitely win. They don't have a veto that's a definite win for them right now. And crucially, the reason I brought up the player fragging thing is this is where, and this is why if I'm Alexi B, I would be watching what's happening with Kerrigan right now, because this is why it's okay when you win an event now to keep him, but if you start dropping off like this and you don't win events, Alexi B is going to be in the same position. But one of the reasons we give insane praise to Kerrigan and Alexi B in these lineups is because they don't have the Monacy, the Ziwu, they don't have the Donk, they don't have the super carry. Yeah. God tier guy who, when you're playing like shit, which by the way, Vitality definitely does do sometimes, he can just come along and say, you know what? I like it like some sort of fucking deity out of the Greek mythology. I just come to, it's okay, I heal you. You don't lose this map. And if you're Apex, you're like, holy fuck, it's nice to have a guy. Tell you what, it's nice to have fucking Superman on speed dial when I'm in trouble. Because you know in Superman, they're always like, please Superman, help me. And he just turns up out of nowhere. There is no Superman for FaZe Clan, bro. And as we all know, anyone who hoped, like in the past years, it was Rops, it ain't Rops. Like, Rops himself would even tell you, like, yeah, maybe don't wait for that call because I'm not coming. Like in this scenario, I think the other problem they have is, one of the things that impressed me about FaZe and all those finals is, it was like a team effort, wasn't it? It was everyone had to do their own parts. Everyone even had maps they were good on.
Yeah.
Everyone's fallen off a little bit. And this is where I often make this point. I know some people vibe with it. This is where I think some people slightly overrate Frozen, unfortunately. I think he's a really good rifler, Maniac. But the difference is, in the same way as Wonderful isn't in the category of Orpa Donk is at Monacy. Frozen isn't the same rifler Donk is, bro. Donk has insane impact. I'm not just saying stats wise, but I think Frozen's he's really good, like wonderful in this analogy, but he's not, he can't 1v9 the game for me. You know what I mean?
I like that you mentioned Frozen because I was opening this kind of thought process in my head where if people do like the very short sighted 1-to-1 comparison of Frozen versus Twist, and they try to tell me that Frozen is better than Twist, I think they can make an argument. And I'm talking purely isolated. Like,
yes.
Just mechanical skills, ability to have, like, highlight moments, whatever. Okay, sure. Maybe you're right. But I think what we might be missing right now was structurally and systematically how Twist would allow other players to be better than what they maybe were.
Yes.
And I don't know if Frozen is doing that. And that was something that we maybe lost track of when Frozen joined for FaZe and the results kept being really good, was that Frozen individually really delivered massively.
Yeah.
Maybe aside from like a grand final or something where a lot of people, myself included, have said that this was like the last step for him. But now you start considering the idea that, okay, maybe stats-wise, maybe Twist wasn't having 1.2 at every event he was going to, but what kind of impact was he having on the rest of the team during rounds, like setting up people, making bait plays, making sure that people are in the best of conditions to have the frags they needed, to have the setups that they wanted to be comfortable in. It feels like FaZe have been very adamant about when Frozen joined, they are going to try to make him comfortable. And I think that's a very commendable approach. Like, you have someone coming in, Kerrigan knows him, they're going to try to make a couple of adjustments so that he can actually shine, and that's great. I have no problem with that. But are we missing a part of the picture where Twist just being there in the role that he was in, playing these roles the way he was maybe allowing other players to shine? Like, Rops is a good example. Is it just a heuristic? Is it just a shortcut to say that Twist was helping Rops be better? Are we taking the responsibility out of Rops' shoulder? That's possible. But I would fear that it's an avenue of questioning. The avenue of questioning of was Twist having that kind of impact around him in a positive manner that would help people perform? And is that not the case, or not as much with Frozen? I think that's an angle that I would like to maybe just dive in and see what's happening in the future with that.
No, because one thing I would say is, I know what you mean. Like, people who are already stats watchers, by the way, all just see that FaZe went back to being in all the finals, whereas obviously with Twists, like, they'd had that slump in 2023 where they were, like they are now in Na'Vi, they were just like a quarterfinals team and they wouldn't go further. The eye test for a fan, I mean, the stats test rather, would be like, well, of course he's better. He's just an upgrade. This is way better. Like, now they can win again because they won those tournaments at the beginning of CS2. But that, first of all, the CS2 tournaments were obviously before they got him in. That was when Frozen came for the finals with Vitality. And the difference is, if I look at the two players, I always saw them more like this. Twists is a player for me who should be more of an aggressive rifler, but in that team, because they had other players like Brokey and Rain, etc., he just ended up a little bit shuffled back in the pack. And I'm with you. For me, he actually sort of like allowed other people the resources to be the star, because he definitely believed in Carrigan's vision, and he was sometimes just created the space for them and give them the resources. I think because Frozen came in as the man in Mouse, I think he gets way more of, like, I think in this team, he's almost set up to be the star player. I mean, you see his numbers are very good. The difference is, he's way more of a Beatty star player though. So if you think about the problem, I think that's even a structural problem they have right now, dude. You have Frozen and Drops, and they're both a little bit baity. So all of a sudden now, if you're Brokey, who I think is probably the best player in the team in terms of, like, if you're asking me, like, impact on the game, Brokey's the man who'll win me the game. Mate, the pressure on him is insane now. He almost has to be, like, a superstar player. Like, I think if you look, and then the others are Kerrigan and fucking Rain. So already were sort of like just getting by sometimes, not having the fragging. Like, it's not even just, this is one of those areas. Like, I always say this in League of Legends. It's not about how many kills you have. It's like, did the kill go on my carry or not? Because that's where the goal. So in CS, it's the same thing. It's not about, do you get the kill? It's about which kill do you get? Because there's a type of kill that Twists would sometimes get. Think about some of the clutches he won. Think about some of the mid rounds where he'd just go in and 2-1 bullet people in the head and open a sight. I mean, he won them tournaments and majors doing that sometimes. The difference is, Frozen for me sometimes more the cleanup guy, or he's more the guy taking a fight in the mid round, you know. So I think that it's just that it's a different set of weapons if you're Kerrigan, you know. And so, and I have to say, I know what you mean. It's funny because maybe Frozen is a better player. Maybe that's why they actually on average have had better results. But they're not quite, when they hit their peak form, as dangerous as the old FaZe in some ways. Because I even noticed they're saying that in interviews themselves. Even they know they've lost the, like, fear factor they had for people. It's why I agree with you. In some ways, it's almost perfect timing that Clone is now. Because if they don't do some demon run and wreck a bunch of the top teams in the semis and the quarter, like, if they don't go to Clone and play like Spirit in the semis and crush them on one of the maps and then beat Na'Vi in the final, whatever, if they don't do that, I feel like every excuse has been dragged out at this point. There's nothing left. Like, we just have to accept they're not very good right now, and unless something functionally changes, which I will say, unlike other teams, they will probably get a lot more time because people believe, like, maybe Kerrigan can make a role swap, maybe you swap some position, hey, let Neo, let's get together, guys, let's figure it out. I think people will give them more time, but I have to agree with you. When you consider that everything now should be heading towards, it's Cologne and then it's the major if you're Kerrigan, right? Bro, if you don't do well at this Cologne, it's going to be, you're going to have to do it, but it'll be a big gamble to double down on that roster, because who really would believe at that point they're going to win the Shanghai major, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And for me, it's just, I consider the team beyond just the opinion of the community. I'm considering the team's view on themselves. Like, this is what is actually starting to worry me. Because if you're within the FaZe rank and you end up the second quarter of the year, and you know your results are a little bit on the down low, and you can feel that people are getting exhausted, and all right, like, you're going to be able to make sense of it. You're going to be able to create this narrative within the ranks of, listen, guys, okay, we know we're not doing our best. Let's everybody take a deep breath. Let's everybody regenerate. We're going to come back. We're going to regroup, and then we're going to attack this second season, and we're going to be much better. Okay, cool. High five. You enjoy your break. See you in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Okay, that's great. The problem is, now you start playing again, and the losses start piling up. This strongly changes whatever stories you had built in your mind as to what was going to happen within the team. And now suddenly you have a longer period of time with results that are worrying or concerning, maybe even frustration inducing. So this is what I'm starting to worry about. Like if Cologne is a failure, and by failure, I mean, when you were in the face jersey, I guess anything but a semi plus would be considered. Yeah, yes. If they were to just lose in quarterfinal to whoever, I think it, unless it's like a legendary quarterfinal, three maps all the way against Spirit or something, I think a quarterfinal would be already looked at as a disappointing result. Then what are the words that you use within the team for the rest of the year? It's like, okay, guys, this is kind of it.
Yes.
Like this is who we are now. And what do we do with this? And now you start rethinking. And this is the danger, right? You start resenting maybe some of the changes you've made in order to accommodate a new player coming in, because at the time it made sense and the results kept following. And now the results aren't here anymore. So you're starting to get, wait a minute, like we used to win. Like, what is going on? Did we make the wrong changes? Did we go wrong somewhere? I think it gets really tricky and dicey. So Cologne, I think, is going to be incredibly important for this roster and for the perennity of this roster midterm. Because if it is a crash, then they might start asking themselves questions that are uncomfortable to bear with.
And then I'll just throw one last factor in, which is the obvious difference between when they made all the finals and when they don't, is the top teams are stronger now. When they've made those finals initially, Spirit only just came on the scene. They hadn't played Na'Vi before the major. And then teams like, obviously, they had Mouse in their back pocket. They just haven't even had the chance to play them to get that win over them at the moment. And then Vitality was in a bit of a slump, weren't they? So if you look back then, the teams weren't as strong. Also, we didn't have these other squads coming up. Like, Astralis wasn't legit. They had the failed super team. You can go down the list. VP hadn't made the moves they have. So the other problem for them right now is the rest of the team's leveled up for me. So I'm with you. I actually think minimum should be the semi for Cologne. I think to actually feel like you have a respite, you probably need to make the final. You know what I mean? You need to feel like, you have to feel like you felt like you could have won the event. I'm with you. You have to feel like it was possible to win. If it's possible to win, we can have like a stay of execution and you can just keep going, right, it was that those are smaller events and it was the player. You can do all that. But if you somehow flunk Cologne, and by the way, God forbid you don't even make the playoffs, you have some very serious questions to ask there, because at that point in time, we have to ask the question, which was never the case before, which is not just should we make a roster move, but who would we sign? Because bro, as much as it might be like, but they've been so good. Yeah, but that's also why surely one roster move could be it. You know what I mean? And look, the reason why I say that it's going to be the hard question is, bro, there is no name you can look at here and cut. Even a fan who's going to go, well, if you look at his numbers, you just cut Robs. Mate, it's a lot easier to cut people like Rops than it is to fucking do it, to say you're going to cut them, than it is to do it in reality. Like, he's another example of a player where you cut him, and God forbid, by the way, he goes to like Vitality or something and then becomes really good and beats you. Like, you know what? All goes back to Mouse. You know, mate, there's some nightmare fuel there if you let a player like that go. So you have to really know that they're done before you do that gamble, you know. But I do think if we think of that, because no one would have before, if you could bring in the right player, though, you also could be right back at number one. You can be right back in the pack, top spot.
Look, I know you're right. The problem is, I mean, I think for the longest time, FaZe had like an incredible prestige like factor to it. Like, you always wanted to be in FaZe.
Of course.
Like, FaZe was this incredible powerhouse. But we all know how like the credit in Counter-Strike kind of fluctuates like faster than Wall Street.
Sure.
So now at this very point in time, like if you're a member of G2, if you're a member of Vitality, even if you're a member of Mouse or whatever, do you immediately take that offer comes your way? Or do you say, okay, wait, hold on a minute. Like, am I in a better place now than I am? Like, it's always easier. It's always easier to have the call of the siren when you're at the very top.
Oh, sure.
And like, if you're frozen and FaZe is asking for you to join, you just say, yes, when? Where do I sign? Please, now. Let's do it now. But if you ask the same question 6 months later, which we have established is a bit of a harder moment, then maybe someone stops and say, well, hold on a minute now. This, like, are you guys okay? Like, is this team in a good place? Like, what kind of family am I sort of buying into right here? Like, what kind of vibe is going on? I wouldn't know how easy it would be for them to now snatch what would be considered an elite player. Like, you could always try and find your luck into a new or a player that is in lower tier, which would obviously take the call because there would be no reason not to do it. But if you're going to try and snatch like an elite player, I don't know how easy that would be.
Well, this is where, again, we're putting the hypothetical speculation hat on here. This is where what you need to do is this, right? There is a player out there who I think is amazing, and I think he would be fire in this team. I think they win loads of them. But he's got an obvious problem, I know, from knowing him over the years. And it's obviously a liaison complexity. But the problem is this, Maniac. The problem is As far as I know, he doesn't want to live in Europe full time. He wants to live at home still and just come for the event. So basically, the reason why I say it, it's not as simple as just getting him, because on paper, it's perfect, right? Obviously, Cole's not as good as FaZe. He might even get a salary bump up. You get to win all. By the way, you even just saw Twists bloody do it. By the way, I can tell you, I know people like Naff started thinking about that move after they saw Twists go and do it. They were like, wait a minute, why am I just sticking with this team? I don't have to. I could probably go to any. In fact, maybe even I could go to a Vitality or a fucking FaZe clan. So I know they've all thought about it, but the problem is, if he wants to stay in NA, what you have to do is you have to make a really intelligent pitch. What you do is this. The pitch isn't the normal pitch of join FaZe full time. This is your career from now on. You're going to be all hit. No, you just tell him, look, it's just a 1-year contract. And you know what? If you don't like it after 6 months, we'll find a way to let you go. So but I tell you what, if we win in that 1 year, you can take 1 year in Europe and then win. And then you know what? If you want, like Twists, go back after that. Go back to Liquid. Go back to any team you want, mate. But do I'd sell it like that. I'd sell it sort of like this is the one window in history. Like, okay. And by the way, if you do it right, here's where you do it. You don't just have that call like me or Neo. So that call comes from Carrigan, bro. Because I'll tell you what, Maniac, I agree with you. If someone says, would you join FaZe now when you're on Mouse? Probably not, because if anything, why don't I beat FaZe, win the major, and then sign for like god tier money? You know, why don't I do it that way if I'm going to do it? But I'll tell you what, if I see that number on the old phone, in this scenario, it'd be Discord call, you know, pop up. If I see that, Carrigan's FaZe, and then Carrigan goes, bro, I need you. Oh, mate. That's like some of a movie. I mean, obviously set it up that way, but that's where you might say yes to a move like that. Because obviously the other angle, I agree, is you have to make a mega gamble. Your gamble has to be something ridiculous like, here's $500,000 for Wrinkle NIP. It has to be somewhat absurd. No, exactly, but the problem is that is such a monster gamble. I'm with you. Like,
I
think the difference is, the other one I said about Leeds, if you could make it happen, that's a slam dunk. The Wrinkle one is like, fucking hell, you're gambling there, mate. You know what I mean? Like, no one has any idea what this guy will do in a major. Could be amazing. Could also be nothing, right?
Yeah.